You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. It is Monday. It is July the 15th. We're going to be talking with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. Donald Trump, our president, under fire for racially charged tweets against the Democratic Congresswomen of color. State Representative Pamela Powers Hanley is with us. She's going to talk about a prevention, a public health model that really works, actually. And then Laura Guzman will be with us. She's with Arizona Mayor Gomez. Laura Gomez is just a remarkable reporter, investigative reporter with Arizona Mayor, talking about migrants held to a different standard when they're transgender at the border. Then Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer, will be with us. Then Steve Farley, candidate for mayor, will be here. Keith Rosenblum, our Mexico reporter, talks about the finance secretary of Mexico resigning. Let's talk with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. Don, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thank you.
Yeah, good afternoon, John.
Well, we got President Trump assailing a group of Democratic congresswomen of color as foreign-born troublemakers who should go back to the, quote, broken and crime-infested places where they came from, ignoring the fact that women are Americans and all but one was born in the United States. Please tell me, what in the name of God has led to a president of the United States who we should look up to just alone for being president that could say such a thing and there not be a firestorm from every American to stop him from saying this kind of crap? It's unbelievable that this has happened, but he's gone. And I think this is a step too far, but I keep saying that, so I don't know how far is.
I don't know how far you are now, someplace past Mars.
I think so.
You're right. Whenever you start to forget how this president is now clearly a racist, he serves to remind us, and he has just done that. And he's also done something else, which is very helpful to Democrats. I'll get to in a moment. But what we're seeing is a consistent strategy on the part of Donald Trump that we have not seen since Richard Nixon. It's right out of the Nixon playbook to create this strategy to divide America. Even the language he's using, go back where you came from, is reminiscent to probably anyone over 50 of that old love it or leave it chant of the far right and the Nixonians back then in the 60s, in the early 70s. Just this ugly, disgraceful, divisive rhetoric that now we hear once again coming out of Donald Trump. And you really wonder, what's the point of it for him? You know, is he trying to... it's not going to energize his racist base any more than it already is. He has those folks. So you just have to think he's either doing it to distract from his other behavior and other actions and failures, like on the border, and I know you'll be talking about that later in the show. I look forward to that. But he's also simply trying to continue to pit Democrats against one another, wading into what's happening in Congress. What he's done, though, is the opposite, and this is the news for Democrats, is he's found the one way to bring Democrats back together by uniting us and reminding all Democrats once again, goal number one, and there is no other goal, is to defeat Donald Trump in 2020 and let all these other intra-party grievances take backseat to that because of what he continues to say, what he continues to do, and how he continues to destroy or attempt to destroy, I don't think he can, all that America stands for.
Well, you know, these kind of words might get you a drink for free in some bar, but when you're president of the United States, you enable people. You encourage people. You allow them to act as you are talking and acting yourself. And that's dangerous for America. That's extremely dangerous. It plays on the fears and hates and hatred of many in this country that'll act upon these words in some way, shape, or form. They will act on these words because they are enabled by the president of the United States. Terrible.
He is enabling that. And what you're talking about is, again, kind of creating this or reviving this idea of white resentment against these so-called foreigners or others who look different than white, older males who are losing power, perceived to be losing power. And that's where he's continued to stir the the pot and fan the flames of that racism and resentment. What's equally disturbing at this point, John, is the fact that you can only say that the GOP is complicit in this now by their silence. You know, that silence in a case like this is tacit approval of the leader of their party. And as I understand it, we've heard nothing from Martha McSally. We've heard nothing from Doug Ducey. We've certainly heard nothing from Mitch McConnell. And we've heard quite the opposite, almost agreement or excuses from folks like Lindsey Graham. That's equally offensive and should be offensive to all Americans who decry racism, to decry this kind of divisiveness that Donald Trump continues to spread. But we've heard nothing from the Republicans, and that's just shameful.
Well, you know, it was Beto O'Rourke who tweeted, quote, "This is racist. These congresswomen have every bit as American as you and represent our values better than you ever will." I mean, that's his reaction. And it's, I think, for the most part, the reaction of most Americans.
It should be. And there is no American, no Democrat, no congresswoman who should respond in any way defensively to this. This is an outrage that Donald Trump is using this kind of divisive language and attacking fellow Americans for their beliefs, which may be different than his, but we are all Americans, and it's just disgusting. I was very pleased to see just this afternoon, before that he attacked, held press conferences, and they didn't take the bait. They stayed focused on representing their constituencies, on looking at the best of America. And that's where the Democrats need to stay focused, frankly, is on shining the light on the problems that the Trump administration and Donald Trump have created for America with regard to the corruption, with regard to the, again, child abuse on the border with the state-sanctioned child abuse and these detention camps, to really focus on what the key issue is right now in America and will be in 2020, and that's what is the character of our nation, who we are and who do we choose to be, and that goes right to morals and values. And what we're seeing on the border, what we're seeing coming out of the White House language, does not speak to what we consider to be the values of real America. And it's up to the Democrats to strengthen that message and stay consistent on presenting that difference, a moral America versus Donald Trump's America of hate.
Well, President Trump on Sunday defended these conditions at the border and these detention facilities visited by Vice President Pence over the holiday weekend. Trump tweeted that the children's rooms that Pence saw were well-run and clean. Facilities for single men were clean but crowded. And Pence said Friday the detention facility visited that housed many families providing for care that every American would be proud of. And then he went to McAllen, Texas, where hundreds of men were crowded into sweltering, foul-smelling pens, cots that were on concrete floors. Tough stuff, he said. The system's overwhelmed. So he did a 180 on the conditions at the border. And they are deplorable. I mean, it's shameful. Absolutely shameful.
And they'll use any excuse or any deflection to avoid actually dealing with and addressing the crisis that they have created. And it can be addressed. I think any reasonable person understands that there are a number of steps that the Trump administration could take to alleviate the medical and humanitarian crises that they have created, and still address the issues of people seeking asylum and of immigrants in an appropriate way. There is a middle ground, but this president seeks to simply demonize them, to use them as props in an angry campaign, while we're watching illness, while we're watching disease, while we're watching family separations occur. We've had men and women and children die in custody of the Trump administration. This is all certainly disgraceful. And we have, despite what Vice President Pence says, we have the Inspector General of Homeland Security himself pointing out that these conditions are abhorrent, that there are all kinds of abuses going on, and we haven't even mentioned the physical and potential sexual abuse that occurred in the Yuma station. But all of this is just unconscionable and really a stain on the history of the United States of America, and there's no one to to hold accountable other than Donald Trump for what's happening.
Pamela Powers Hanley standing by. We'll talk with her shortly, but Joe's on our phones. Joe, welcome to the John C. Scott Show. You're with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. Go ahead, Joe.
John, this is why I love your show, because you have Don Jorgensen on.
Yes.
And yes. So we'll start out. Hey, but you know what? I just really, you know, this is part of the problem, though, with the where the problem began. It the $4.6 billion bill that just got signed, that bill stunk. And it was a Republican-led, it was 24 House of Rep people that got together and sided with Republicans. That was part of the rub that was with the squad, and where Pelosi was so busy punching left, she totally gave Donald Trump the sweetheart deal. No look-back features. You know, there's no surprise visits in that thing. Everything is ICE. It's to the administration level. It's everything that's wrong, and that's the problem I've got with my Democratic Party, is they're so weak. They don't even act like they have any power in the House of Representatives, and they're not stepping up to the pump by really putting in looking provisions. And to sit there and like now we've got like this mess that, you know, like we're so busy inner squad fighting, you know, and this to take it even back, if you remember Ilhan Omar, if you remember HR1, that was our chance to get off this 2018 new House of Rep you know, majority that we earned. We worked our butts off for that. And what do? We blow it by blowing HR1, which was campaign finance reform, over squabbling around over Ilhan Omar said some things about AIPAC and, you know, the wholesale purchasing of our politicians. Everybody knows that that's going on. And to sit here and say, no, we've got to kiss the ring, you've got to do this, that, and the other thing, Donald Trump jumps on, and all of a sudden, it's like something weird. There's something way weirder, even before Donald Trump and his whole circus came to town. And it's called Democratic Identity Crisis. And I'll tell you what, it's just, Don, this thing, it's as big as Donald, the lies that Donald Trump tells. But what say you?
Well, if we could just send them back to their, place where they should be, you know, in their broken, crime-infested place where they came from, we'd be a lot better off. I'm kidding.
Joe, you're going to love this. I agree with you pretty much 100%. You are not wrong.
What?
The Democrats seem to have a problem when they're not running from behind. When they're ahead, it's an issue. And that they don't seem to know what to do when they're in power, and they have fallen into a lot of these intramural squabbles rather than showing strength. And the best example of that is the one that Joe described first, that's rolling over on this immigration bill because of the crisis Trump and the Republicans created, and then proposed their own solution just to provide a bailout bill, which wasn't needed. Trump could have shifted the money from other departments, as he's done in other cases, but they push through this money to look like they were responding, and the Democrats, instead of standing strong to put in those provisions for medical care and inspections and addressing the issues of families, they did just knuckle under for fear of looking weak or not protecting the families. And the Democrats in Congress and anyone who's running need to stand up and understand how to use their power and take advantage of it. Nancy Pelosi seems to understand that most of the time, but even she's fallen into that trap lately. I think the good news is down the road, when we start looking more and more at the presidential candidates, that question about who's going to stand strong, who's going to move forward with clear direction, will separate out those that have a real chance of beating Donald Trump.
Don Jorgensen, thanks for being on our show. It's always great to hear from you. I appreciate it very, very much, and we will talk again. I'm sure Donald Trump will give us a reason to get together one more time, or another time, or another time after that. Thanks for being on the show.
No doubt.
No doubt, indeed. Thank you. Former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County, Don Jorgensen, a regular contributor to the John C. Scott Show, State Representative Pamela Powers-Hanley is standing by. We'll talk with her right after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum, now in our 31st year of continuous political talk. State Representative Pamela Powers-Hanley is with us, and recently she had a talk at the UU Church. She's going to explain what the UU Church is, and the title was Prevention of Public Health, a Model. So let's talk about that, Representative Hanley. First of all, the UU Church is?
The UU Church is the Unitarian Universalist Church on 22nd in Tucson. I think many people have probably been there for events. We have a big hall and a big sanctuary that we rent out to lots of people, and groups like Jobs with Justice often rent it, and actually the LD10 Democrats are down there these days for their meetings. So, yes, it's a Unitarian Universalist Church, and in the summer, the minister usually goes on vacation, so they tap people like me and other people in the congregation who usually have something good to say or something interesting to say to give the sermon. So yesterday, my sermon was on what I see as the crisis in maternal and child health in the United States, and particularly in Arizona.
All right. How bad is it, by the way, Representative Hanley?
Well, you know, it's way worse than I thought it was, you know.
And, well, that's not good.
I know it's not good. I think I've mentioned to you before that my newest grandchild was born with a birth defect last November, and I spent many days in the nursery ICU with her and my daughter and her husband, rocking and feeding her and things like that. And when you have occasion over 3 months to be in the NICU for many hours a day, you make a lot of observations. You meet the moms that are there. You meet the nurses. And you just, you know, you're sitting and watching. And my casual observation by sitting there was that the face of premature birth in Arizona was young, brown, and rural. And when I went home and looked at the data, I was right, and it was way worse than I thought it was. And I think it's an abomination that the state's not doing anything about this.
They're not doing anything. There's no money available whatsoever, no programs available from the state.
But There are some programs from the state, but if you look at the data that is on the ADHS website, we're obviously not doing enough, you know. And so they have a lot of data on their website about women who are giving birth in the state of Arizona. So there's basically there's a lot of preventable death. In fact, the United States, the death rate for these are healthy women who got pregnant and died within 42 days of giving birth. Right.
Wow.
So the United States, the rate has gone up by 26% over like the last 10 years. And in the rest of the developed world, it's going down. So women are dying unnecessarily. And part of it is access to care, because, you know, in some states like Arizona, women's health clinics were closed, you know, because of the anti-abortion laws. Right. And so it's access to care. I also believe that especially in the rural areas, they're in dire straits because, they don't have a place to go to get contraception. So if a woman gets, pregnant, it was an unintended pregnancy, she's in deep trouble, you know, because she'd have to drive to Phoenix or Tucson if she wanted to get an abortion. And if she's young and she's not getting prenatal care, because we know a lot of people are not getting prenatal care in the state, and she ends up with a premature baby, then what is she going to do? You know, that's $1 million bill for that premature baby. And so this is if we are really a pro-life, fiscal conservative state, we would be figuring out a way to have public health clinics across the state to help pregnant women. And we would have cheaper free contraception for these young women who are getting pregnant and didn't intend to and don't have the means to take care of the child.
Well, you know, Representative Hanley, we've never solved this rural health care crisis in Arizona at all. I mean, we're a state that has large areas of very sparse population, and the ability to get health care to these people that live in these rural areas seemingly is impossible for Arizona. I don't understand that. I mean, there should be money available for this and should be care available.
Yes. And there's, you know, I'm sure that there is, you know, matching funds from the federal government or something like that. But if you look at it, for example, on the ADHS website, it said in 2016, there were 84,000 live births in the state of Arizona, and 9% of those were preterm. And what they told me at Banner Health is that every preterm baby is around $500,000 to $1 million each, depending on what's wrong with them when they're born, how little they are, something like that. So you take that 8,000 babies and multiply that by, let's say, 750,000. Let's split the difference. That's $6 billion. If we wanted to lower health care costs in the United States, we would tackle premature birth. We would save so much money, and we would save so many lives.
You know, there's an Arizona Daily Star story today in the morning paper talking about a teen-led program through the El Rio Health Center that's provided more than 4,000 teenagers with access to reproductive health services and education since 2018. Many organizers say many of those patients would not have sought services elsewhere. There are programs available. They need to be expanded to rural areas. And I've had one legislator after another that have sat in your seat in this legislature, our legislatures of the past, that seemingly had this on their radar, but nothing ever got done. It just never, ever happened.
Well, you know, it's, you know, during the budget night debates, right? Speaker Bowers said it perfectly, and I was just shocked that he said it so clearly. But, you know, we were debating family and medical leave for state workers or something like that, right? And I was in the debate, and there were some other women who were in the debate, you know, arguing for this. And, you know, he got up and said, he goes, there's, you know, some people like minorities and young people and women, they just want somebody to take care of them. You know, like the state. And of course, the state's not going to take care of them, you know. And, you know, went into the whole pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of a talk and told about how he traded a painting that he had done for his wife's medical care. Well, doctors have bills, too. They can only accept so many paintings for a birth, you know.
Good Lord.
So,
really?
I mean, there's a mindset there that they don't have to do anything. And so what I see with the Republicans, and you see this in lots of issues, including like sentencing reform or charter school reform, you know, the people are hounding them to do something, right? They can't ignore it. So they do something, the tiniest little bit that they can, and then they say, look, see, I did that, you know, like Ducey's 20 by 2020, you know. That's what you see with like this maternal death. You know, we passed a bill in 2019 that Kate Broppy-McGee suggested. And what we're going to do is look at maternal death data, because apparently we've been collecting it and not looking at it.
Oh, you know? Well, there you go.
I know. And so it's just, I mean, like I said, I mean, if we call ourselves pro-life and we call ourselves fiscally conservative, we should be tackling this premature birth issue. It's really, it's silly not to. I mean, it makes good public health sense and it's good fiscal sense.
Yeah, I worked for a radio station once that said, if we don't open the bill, we don't owe it.
Yeah, there you go.
This is the same kind of thinking here, you know. Mm-hmm. If you just don't open it, then it doesn't exist. You know, I think...
You know, and I think, you know, I mean, so if you look at the cost, you know, with those premature births, there's about, I think it's like 52% of the births in Arizona are paid for by access. So state dollars are paying for high bills in the NICU rather than paying for, you know, community health workers to go fan out across the state to do early intervention with pregnant women. Far too many pregnant women who are not white are not getting enough prenatal care.
You know, I'll tell you one thing. We know that health care made a decision, and they are certainly had a factor in the election of Kyrsten Sinema to the U.S. Senate of the state of Arizona over Martha McSally. There's no question that health care was a theme of the winning senator. I think it's going to be a theme in the campaign with Kelly and Martha McSally. Health care is not resolved in Arizona, and we have many health care issues that can be resolved. And one of them is, if you're going to throw out the Affordable Care Act, what are you going to replace it with? And Republicans have no clue whatsoever as to how to replace this. But health care is really on the minds of Arizonans, and it has been for the last three cycles of elections. And I think it's determined
right.
The outcome of them.
Right. So. Yeah, and then the only ideas that the Republicans had in the legislature this year were more privatization ideas and ideas that would hurt the Affordable Care Act even more. So they're still on this tactic of, we either want a straight repeal or we're just going to kill it by 1,000 cuts, you know. So, yeah, it's really, it's scary. And Like, for example, here's two really scary statistics that I found when I was for my talk on Sunday. I collected data from four sources. I also had like personal stories that I put in there. And one of the data sources said that for African-American women, they have a maternal death rate, that's dying within 42 days of giving childbirth, they have a maternal death rate that is 3 to 4 times that of white women.
Wow.
And it has not improved in 100 years. Oh, my God. I was shocked. And then the other thing that it said was that women of any race who don't have insurance have that same rate. It's 3 to 4 times what it is for everybody else if you're uninsured and you have a baby.
By the way, you use speech, you know, turn search speech. Is that on Facebook? Can people see it on Facebook?
Well, what they do at the church is they have an audio recording. So when the audio recording is up, I'll share that on Facebook and on my
on
my blog.
That would be great. People, I think, need to really hear what you have to say.
Yes, and you know, I had audience participation, and so there's a lot of good stories. We had a couple of, there was like an ER nurse and some other people who spoke. So there was a lot of interest, a lot of interaction. People filled out comment cards. And so I'm going to have what their ideas are. You know, so when I'm talking to the lobbyists in next spring, I said, well, here's what the people of Tucson want me to do, you know. So it's very valuable to have input like that.
Yes, it is. And thanks so much for your hard work. State Representative Pamela Powers Hanley, I appreciate you being on the show so much, and I really appreciate your hard work. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, John.
Good to talk with you. State Representative Pamela Powers Hanley from Legislative District 9. She is a Democrat. She is a progressive. Proud to be both. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to talk with Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror. She's one of the investigative reporters that make up this great group of investigative reporters that do unbelievable work in the state of Arizona of looking for the truth, finding it, and then publishing it. Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror, investigative reporter, is my guest after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this 15th day of July. Laura Gomez is a member of Arizona Mirror, investigative reporters in Phoenix that do an incredible job of looking for the truth and finding it. Laura Gomez is an author of a rather remarkable story on transgender women that are caught along the border. Handwritten letter by 29 detainees. The group says there's inadequate medical attention. Alleged that detention guards abuse them verbally and psychologically on a daily basis. These people are in real trouble and stand in the middle of a very difficult situation. Here's Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror. Laura, great story. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
What was the number was, what, 29 in this particular facility? Are there more transgender people that are isolated? And are they isolated from the general population as they cross the border?
So not always. I have several facilities throughout the country where they detain immigrants who recently arrived, but also immigrants who are maybe they've been in the country longer. All of them are in deportation proceedings. The information that I got from ICE is that as of July 1st, they have 145 people who identify as transgender in their custody in 32 facilities around the country. There's just one facility in New Mexico where, there is just a unit designated for transgender detainees. So what generally happens is that, immigrants who are detained who identify as transgender are usually placed with the general population. And we've seen that sometimes they are placed with, let's say, a transgender woman is placed with other men. That is, ICE has certain policies as to how they're supposed to place these people according to their gender identity, but that not always happens.
By the way, this is New Mexico. Is it Cibola? I don't know how to pronounce that in New Mexico.
It's in a small village called Milan, but it's in Cibola County in New Mexico. So it's in a very remote part of the state.
Well, you report in your story that the unit has about a 60-bed capacity, common areas, television, microwaves, libraries, blah blah blah. And according to the reports that you have been issuing, that ICE has held people there for quite some time. I don't know how long, and the custody held in 32 facilities out the country, throughout the country. So not all transgender people detained by ICE are held at that one location. They're elsewhere as well, are they not?
That's correct.
All right. What did you find out about the treatment of these people as they are isolated and then separated and then placed in these facilities? What kind of treatment are they actually receiving from your investigative report?
So any ICE facility is very hard to access. The media is usually not given access. And if we are, the times that I have been inside detention facilities, it's been to speak specifically to certain people who agree to an interview, and we coordinate that. But they rarely give you a chance to go in there, tour the facility, look at the conditions, speak to people kind of candidly. So what happened, and I wasn't part of this, but ICE did open this, this unit for transgender detainees in New Mexico to other media outlets for them to tour it. But they couldn't bring any cameras. They couldn't speak to anybody. They could just basically observe and hear information from ICE agents there. And what seems to happen is that that the detainees there decided to pen a letter after that visitation happened. I don't know the reasons. If they were upset with the way they were portrayed, but basically, they're saying that they're speaking out, and I think it's pretty significant that you have 29 people who are all in deportation proceedings. Some of them are also asking for asylum to denounce the conditions while they're still inside a facility. They say that they fear retaliation, but that they're more afraid of continuing to be held in the conditions that they are. They say they're not giving the necessary medical attention. Some of them are HIV positive and they don't receive the right treatment, is what they say. Some of them don't have medication. And then they also say that, their rights as people, as humans, are not being respected. And so they kind of just wanted to use this letter to bring attention to this and to find a way to get their voices out there to the rest of the public who really doesn't have many, many avenues of hearing from people inside immigration detention.
We're talking with Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror, part of an investigative group of reporters in Phoenix that search for the truth every single day. They're an amazing organization, and you can go online to Arizona Mirror and read their work. By the way, there's a lady by the name of Hernandez, a transgender woman. She died about a year ago at Cibola, that facility in New Mexico. And there were circumstances around her death that caused outrage and controversy. What did you find out about her death at that facility?
So the controversy around her death is that her lawyers, her family, and the people who were also detained with her at the same time that she was in custody, they say that she, her health was quickly deteriorating and immigration officials didn't intervene until it was too late. Some of them alleged that she was physically abused by ICE agents and there was an independent autopsy that was financed by her attorney or the family's attorney, and that's what they found, that she did suffer abuse. But then a year later, there was a medical examiner report that says that she died of an HIV-related condition, and, the bruises on her body were from the emergency medical services efforts to resuscitate her. So there's just kind of unclear narratives or opposing narratives about what really happened before Roxana died. There's a group, a national group of lawyers who have a lawsuit out against ICE to get get them to release records surrounding, you know, her death and how that was handled by the facility and by ICE. So I think, you know, what really happened is still unknown and isn't set on stone. So I'm assuming, I'm hoping that with this lawsuit, there probably would be more documents that are out to, you know, clarify.
In April, there were other organizations that kind of banded together, I believe, in Texas, New Mexico, and California, and they all wrote, as you report in your story on Arizona Mirror, that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties to investigate the civil rights and civil liberties violations. They're asking for an investigation. And the groups have outlined inadequate medical and mental health care, prolonged and inadequate use of solitary confinement, inappropriate meals, discrimination, verbal abuse, among other violations. And when the government detains a person, it has a legal obligation to ensure that person is safe and receives medically necessary care. That's not always the case, is it? And certainly in this particular isolated group, it is probably more of a concern, isn't it, Laura?
Yes, those are the concerns. Just kind of, it is widely known that people who are part of the LGBTQ community, when they're in detention, they just face, you know, harsher conditions. Maybe they've already experienced trauma, and being in a confined space, you know, kind of makes that even worse. A lot of the women who identify as transgender, they recently arrived to the U.S. from Central America, precisely fleeing persecution, discrimination. So there are people who've already experienced traumatic situations, who do need, you know, to be in spaces where they can feel healthy, they can feel well cared for, where their, you know, rights are upheld. And what several of these groups are saying, and this isn't just for, because the facility in New Mexico also holds adults, it's not just the transgender detainees who are there, but they're saying that generally, the ICE and the facility operator, which is a private contractor, that they're violating, you know, basic civil rights, basic civil liberties. And then on top of that, they're also violating ICE's own policies on how people in their immigration detention centers should be treated.
There's some employees also saying that in recent days, employees of the unit had staged activities that were solely the opposite of reality. They deceived us, coerced us into signing papers that weren't explained to us, and didn't know what the true purpose was. And this painted a pretty rosy picture, excuse me, of the way it was portrayed, but that wasn't the way it was at all. These people said they were deceived. So how much of the facility did you see, and what were you able to observe putting together the story?
Like I mentioned, I didn't go to the facility. The ICE did open this facility for media interviews around this time last month. But they didn't allow anybody to speak to the detainees or to take any photographs or any recording devices. So ICE published their own photos, and that's what the, you know, in this letter, these detainees, that's what they say. They say, you know, those photos that they took of us, they staged these activities. And if you look at the photos, it's, you know, you can see people are gardening and playing volleyball and basketball and gather around a room where somebody's getting a haircut. You know, so they're saying that those activities were specifically staged for the purpose of taking the pictures, and it's not what the reality of their stay there is.
Well, it's going to be a situation in which I suppose these legal actions are going to at least provide some further information. Are you hopeful we'll see something soon from these attempts in the courtroom to get to the bottom of what the conditions are there?
I am interested in seeing what, if anything, you know, like you mentioned, there's been several groups from, you know, this facility has been kind of under scrutiny since the death of Roxana Hernandez last year. And since there was a group of several local, but also groups across state lines in New Mexico, California, Texas, who have called for an investigation into this facility. And then now we have this letter from detainees themselves also calling for an investigation. So I'm interested to see if there is some more scrutiny and oversight that comes from this. But so far, I haven't heard anything.
Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror. Laura, take a few moments to explain your relationship with Arizona Mirror and Arizona's mayor's relationship with telling the story of the public of stories that they wouldn't read or see or hear about anywhere else. It's an amazing success story of investigative reporters all banding together to get to the truth of so many stories. Tell me about Arizona Mirror.
Yeah, we are a new online publication. All of our stories are up on our website, azmirror.com. We're a nonprofit journalism organization, so all of our content is free and accessible. We have a newsletter that goes out every morning. And I came to the Arizona Mirror from the Arizona Republic. Our goal and our mission at the Mirror is to cover issues that are overseen by other media that are still important. So what we really want to do is fill in a vacuum that because of the reality in the journalism industry and jobs being cut and news organizations shrinking, we want to fill in the gap and come and really engage the public with stories that are important and of impact. And we also really focus on state politics. So we have our, we're based on here in Phoenix at the state legislature. So, whenever session's on, we keep track on what's going on there. And really, we really want to be of service to the people who are interested in politics, who want to know more about what's going on in their local in state governments. So we really want to bring them into that, that conversation and that space. We know that politics can be a very kind of insider dynamic. So it's mostly, lawmakers and lobbyists and staff at the state legislature talking amongst each other and not really engaging the people who are not as familiar with the day-to-day of politics. So really want to bring those people in and hopefully be, provide something that helps them be more informed and feel more engaged in their community.
Well, you're doing a great job. And by the way, you got one of the great political cartoonists in the entire country with Benson moving from the Republic to your website. He's amazing.
Yes. We're very happy to have him. And it's just, I think it's a joy for all of us to continue to see his cartoons and his work and his take on the issues. It's good that he still has a space to do that. So,
well, it's a big damn deal. It really is. It's just a big damn deal. It's just, I'm amazed. You guys are doing such a great job. I appreciate you telling this story, and I hope you'll keep us posted on what you find out down the road as to what's going to happen with these folks that are transgender and in that one facility in New Mexico and the follow-up that they're asking for. So let us know, and we appreciate you being on the show today. I truly, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me and for the support.
You bet. Laura Gomez of Arizona Mirror. Go to arizonamirror.com, and you'll find out stories from all over the state and all over the country that reflect these great, talented investigative reporters that have combined into this Arizona Mirror project, in which they write stories about our state and about our legislature, about our governor, that you just don't find anywhere else. You just don't find out anywhere else these stories that are so well covered by Arizona Mirror and people like Laura Gomez. Jim Small is a reporter for Arizona Mirror. We've known him for years. He was the yellow page editor of the Capital Times and was editor of the Capital Times for a long time. We've had a long association with Jim Small, who is a part of this group at Arizona Mirror. want to thank Laura for being with us. I want to thank Don Jorgensen, the former chair of the Democratic Party, talking about Donald Trump, asking that these four congresswomen be sent back to where they came from. But Donald Trump did not realize, or maybe did, they're all from this country, with one exception. And he's talking about the crummy place, the crime-infested place they came from. Kind of one of the more astounding comments ever from a president of the United States, and certainly from Donald Trump, to attack these women. President Trump on Sunday assailed a group of Democratic congresswomen of color as foreign-born troublemakers who should go back to their broken, crime-infested places from which they came, ignoring the fact that the women are American citizens and all but one was born in the United States. Trump's tweet prompted a wave of condemnation from Democrats who set aside their rifts to speak as one in calling Trump's remarks racist and breathtakingly divisive. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the president wants to make America white again. Representative Ocasio-Cortez of New York, adjusting for the day with Pelosi, said Trump can't conceive of an America that includes us. And Donald Trump was certainly referring to the Ocasio-Cortez and her allies in what has become known as the Squad. The others are Representatives Omar of Minnesota and Presley of Massachusetts, Tlaib of Michigan. Only Omar is from Somalia and is foreign-born. Ocasio-Cortez swiftly denounced his remarks. "Mr. President, the country that I have come from and the country we all swear to is the United States. You are angry because you cannot conceive of an American that includes us. You rely on a frightening of America for your plunder." Omar says, if addressing Trump, "You are stroking white nationalism because you are angry that people like us are serving in Congress and fighting against your hate-filled agenda." Well, Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York, chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, tweeted, "Racial arsonist strikes again. Shut your reckless mouth." And with his tweet, Trump again inserted himself into the rift between Pelosi and the liberal congresswoman after offering unsolicited defense of the Democratic speaker days earlier. Nancy Pelosi has been seeking to minimize the Ocasio-Cortez influence in recent days, prompting Ocasio-Cortez of accusing Pelosi of trying to marginalize women. "She is not a racist," Trump said Friday. Well, on Sunday, Trump's tone turned negative. "So interesting to see progressive Democratic congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are complete and totally catastrophic and the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, even if they have a functional government at all. And now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest, most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run." It's amazing. He's talking about congressmen and congresswomen elected to the Congress of the United States, one of the more important elected offices held by anyone in America. "Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they come, then come back and show us how it's done? The attacks may have been to further the divides within the Democratic caucus, strained over the internal debates and liberal policies on whether to proceed with the impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump. Instead, Democrats united in denouncing the comments which evoked the old racist trope of telling a black person to go back to Africa. Let us be clear about what this vile comment is, a racist attack on the Democratic congresswoman." Another 2020 contender, former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke, tweeted at the president, "This is racist. These congresswomen are every bit as American as you and represent our values better than you ever will." We'll be back with Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer. We'll take a look at the situation at the border in the middle of July 2019. Mo Goldman's one of the best immigration lawyers in America. We'll hear from him after these messages.